Welcome back to Balagan. The judicial overhaul in Israel is led by four different groups of interest. Benjamin Netanyahu, our prime minister, who is invested in stopping his trials. The Likud party and its members, who seek power and control. The Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox, who care about being exempt from military service and continuing their control over the rabbinical institutions. And the group of Messianic Orthodox. Itamar Ben-Gvir, Bezalel Smotrich, Simcha Rotman, and Avi Maoz all represent different approaches of Jewish supremacy that are nurtured from the same origins. To discuss Jewish fundamentalism, I am glad to have Dr. Tomer Persico, a researcher fellow at the Hartman Institute, a religious and secularism researcher and thinker. He is the author of Jewish Meditation, and his most recent book is In God's Image, The Idea of Individualism, Freedom, and Equality. Dr. Persico, good evening. Hello, and welcome to Balagan.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, you know, I mentioned different names of leaders of so-called religious Zionism in Israel. Can you tell us a little bit, first thing, about who are they and where are they coming from? What are their beliefs?
Do you want me to start at the beginning of religious Zionism itself?
No.
Really?
It's up to you. I mean, we can go. I think that it's important that we'll touch it.
But, let's
start with the people that I mentioned. Itamar Ben-Gvir, Bezalel Smotrich, Simcha Rotman, and Avi Maoz. When I'm telling you those names, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Okay, they are the extreme fringe of religious Zionism in Israel. Fundamentalists, I would say, from a religious typology point of view. Different within themselves, but very extreme, racist, homophobic, anti-liberal, and each in his own way, which I would gladly elaborate on. And people who are at this point came to hold some of the most important offices in Israeli government in a very rare constellation of happenings that allowed them to hold such power. But that's where we are right now.
So, but those people, some of them are new. I mean, none of them is actually, I would say, a new name for people who's been in the field of religious Zionism. But for most Israelis, people like Avi Maoz and Simcha Rotman were quite anonymous until 2 to 3 years, right?
Yeah. But even Bezalel Smotrich was at the back seats of the religious Zionist party. And Itamar Ben-Gvir was not at all a member of parliament. His name was a bit known, but he couldn't reach the threshold of votes necessary to enter parliament. These are fringe characters, really. And you can say it's a sign of a sick society when such characters come from the fringes and enter the center.
We're talking about fringe people, but they have 14 seats in the Knesset, actually 15.
Yeah.
Because one member of the Knesset in the Likud is actually, because of the coalition agreement,
is also a member of... And again, so why is this? This is because Bennett, which is the more mainstream representative of religious Zionism, did not run in these elections because he was a prime minister in the last government. His relationship with his public has gone through some up and downs, and he's trying to organize his power again from outside the parliament. And so really the mainstream of religious Zionism was left without any real representative. And what many of them did was in some sort of, they didn't have any choice but to vote for Smotrich, which ran with Ben-Gvir and put them both in parliament.
So we spoke a little bit about those characters. Itamar Ben-Gvir has a long history, I would say, as a vigilante Jew in Israel. He was one of Benjamin Kahana's prodigies.
Meir
Kahana, right. Benjamin was his son, no?
Yeah, his son, yes.
And Bezalel Smotrich actually started his, public activity only throughout the disengagement and after the disengagement. And Simcha Rotman was a lawyer that nobody knew about until a couple of years ago. But they come with new, I would say, type of religious Zionism. And I'm putting it in quotation marks, because it was unknown to the majority of Israelis. But what can you tell us about those, you know?
Again, it was known, you know, by extremist sayings of rabbis here and now and then, and it was known by the settler youth who would sometimes attack even IDF soldiers. But it was, again, it was in the fringes. It was these weird kind of extremists that you hear of them time and again, but you don't really get too interested. And now, in general, what we can call this area of religious Zionism or this public, we called it Chardal in Israel. Chardal, acronym for Charedim Leumiim, nationalist ultra-Orthodox. Now, within them, there are quite a few groups, which, again, I would love to elaborate on, but we need to understand what differentiates Chardal from mainstream religious Zionism. It's not that they simply are more observant or more devout or more pious than the regular religious Zionists, even though they are more observant of the halakha, they care more about the halakha, they are more meticulous in observancy. But the main difference, I would say, is that they are antagonistic towards modernity and its values. Humanism, liberalism, feminism, LGBT rights, right? The whole package of what we call rights discourse, liberalism, individual autonomy, this is for them an anathema. It's for them something to beware from, of. And this is what differentiates them from mainstream religious Zionism, which is just not there. It's observant of the halakha, but it always has and even had pride in making connections, in Torah ve'avudah, so Torah and work, Torah and science, Torah and derech eretz, and you know, being a mensch, that sort of, we are going to be observant, but we are also going to be part of the modern world. And they are different in that. And indeed, in that, they are similar to the Charedim. But they are unsimilar, they are distinct from the Charedim by being nationalists, even I would say hyper-nationalists, and by wanting to influence the whole country, basically make it into a theocracy.
First thing I want to ask you, since we're talking, you know, to most of our audience is American, if you can compare them to any of the groups in American society, would you compare them, for example, to the evangelist movement or?
Yeah, certainly. In terms of religious type, yes, they are fundamentalists and nationalists, as some of the evangelicals are now, who are also Christian nationalists. I would say there's a lot of similarities also with the obsession with anti-LGBTs, also anti-liberalism. So in broad lines, of course, they are different because they're Jewish and Judaism is a whole different framework, but that's the comparison.
So if I want to go to the origins of this evolvement or mutation, depends how you look at it, what are the sources? Where do they nurture their beliefs from?
So if we take the history of religious Zionism, we can basically divide it into three parts. The first was the Mizrahi, as it was called. It's Rabbi Reines' project of uniting his movement with Herzlian Zionism, with the Zionist movement in its inception. We're talking the end of the 19th century. And again, the ideal was we're going to be observant and we're going to be Zionist. We're going to be modern. We're going to work with the secular Zionists to establish a state in Israel. That held on, I would say, until the 70s, something like that. What changed, of course, is the 67 war, the Six-Day War, which shook up things in a lot of ways, but also theologically for religious Zionism. And what religious Zionism did was it changed its focal point, and it's even changed its spiritual leadership, I would say, from Mizrahi, Rabbi Reines, and his followers, his students, to Rabbi Cook, Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, Abraham Isaac Cook, who was the first chief rabbi of Israel in the 20s, but became a spiritual leader and a theologian through the interpretation of his son, Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Cook, who lived. Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook died in 35, Tzvi Yehuda Cook died in 82. And Tzvi Yehuda Cook made his father's theology into the main theological motivation and explanation for the settler movement, really, for Gush Emunim, for the settler movement, for the occupation of Judea and Samaria. And this changed religious Zionism. Now, out of that came this group who wanted to be more observant of the halakha and which started to develop an antagonism towards some, at least some of modern values and ideals. Okay. And again, this group, it's fringe within religious Zionism. It's perhaps 15% of religious Zionism, maybe 20%, not more than that. So within the entire Jewish community of Israel, it's 2% of Jews in Israel. It's really not a lot of people, 200,000 maybe, but their influence is immense. They are very devout, very militant, very motivated, and very sure of their faith. They have no doubts, right? They're very extreme. So they can amass quite more power than their percentage in the population.
You sent me an article, and I read it actually, really fascinating, A Natural Act of Vengeance, Settler Violence and Two Types of Jewish Fundamentalism, that was published in Sources.
Yeah, Sources.
And
it's the journal of the Shalom Hartman in North America.
Awesome. And I will add it to the episode description so people can read it. You're putting two types of Jewish fundamentalism. I actually see that, always saw them as one, you know, like two siblings of the same family. What's the distinction that you're putting between the two types? Because you're shedding light on Ben Gvir on one hand and the Hilltop Boys.
No. And I would say there are four. I wrote about two in those article, but let's divide the map into four parts. Awesome. We've got the ultra-mamlachti. Mamlachti is statist, Republican, in a small R way, Chardal, which is Rabbi Tzvi Tao and his yeshivas and followers. His representation in parliament now is Avi Maoz, the extreme homophobic...
Anti-LGBTQ.
Person there. That's him. What's special about them is that apart from the characterizations of the Chardal that I gave before, they are very mamlachti. They think the state is very holy and is the vehicle for redemption in the world, the Israeli state. Okay? Then we've got Smotrich and his circles, which are more, less mamlachti. They don't do so. They don't, you know, think about the state so much as the vehicle for redemption. They're a bit disappointed by the state, by the state of Israel and its secular values, but they still hold it in great respect and they simply want to change it, right, for their ways. Then we've got Ben Gvir and his Kahanists. They are followers of Kahana. So here we have a distinction in the spiritual leadership. It's not Rabbi Cook anymore. It's Kahana, Mayor Kahana. They basically view the state as illegitimate. The state as being a secular state, it is illegitimate. They want to change it completely. They are almost, I would say, they're not only not mamlachti, they're almost post-Zionist or even anti-Zionist. They're simply, they won't show it, right? But that's the theology that motivates them. And they are, of course, extremely racist. I would compare them to the KKK in U.S. history. And finally, we've got the Hilltop Youth. Now, the Hilltop Youth is sometimes seen as the foot soldiers of all the other groups. They are the ones who are conducting pogroms and violent attacks against Palestinians, against the village of Hawara, different and other different places in Judea and Samaria, killing, burning randomly Palestinians. But they have a distinct theology. They are, in a way, they are anarchists, but in a more, I mean, their behavior is anarchistic, but they hold a romantic view of being close to nature, living as if in biblical times.
Yeah.
And they want basically to destroy the state of Israel as it is right now and establish from scratch a fully theocratic state with a king from the house of David and a temple and whatnot, right? So that they are, on the other hand, the least halachic, the least observant halachically of the groups. They are, you know, they have this anarchistic ethos and this romantic ethos. So some of them observe halacha, but some don't. And yet still they are these fundamentalist religious extremists.
And do they have, like the Hilltop Boys, do they follow any radical figure or no?
So they have a few rabbis and distinguished rabbis who they, I would say, take inspiration from. One is Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg. The other is Rabbi Dov Lior. They read what they write and they respect them. But I wouldn't say they have any rabbinical authority as such. They have this anarchistic streak in their thought and they won't really sway to the word of a certain rabbi.
You're saying that eventually they are not being supported by the majority of, I would say, religious Zionism, but there is some sort of a vacuum, right? I mean, I think that the only only person on the other side, not on the other side, but who will actually represent today what we call mamlachtiyut in religious Zionism that sit in the Knesset is actually Matan Kahana,
who Chili Trooper, which are both in Gantz's party, the Machane Mamlachti, right?
Yeah, and Chili Trooper is a lot more moderate, I would say, than Matan Kahana. Yeah. But Matan Kahana, he is a right-winger, like known to be a right-winger.
Yeah.
But he's, we can't break the rules. We need to hold the state together.
Yeah, but that's exactly it. Bennett is also, Naftali Bennett, who was prime minister, he's also a right-winger. He's not a left-winger in any way. But he represents, he and Matan Kahana represent the mainstream religious Zionism, which, while being right-winged, is not anti-liberal, is not anti-LGBT as such, right? They're conservative, but it's not like, it's not their agenda, and they have this ethos of all people were created in the image of God and they're equal, etc. They have that, right? That's the difference, really.
It's amazing that you are able to see, to distinct those four different groups, because when I look at them, or when the, you know, general public is looking at them, they see a bunch of pogromniks. And they all look the same in a way. We're talking, today is the August 28th. Just this morning, Bezalel Smotrich went to defend Itamar Ben-Gvir, and he told the U.S. not to preach us because we know what you guys have been doing in Afghanistan and Iraq. So don't tell us what to do in the West Bank. And it seems that they are like completely not aligned with the state of Israel. They are like in a pursuit of taking over the country in the
in the future. I mean, what they now want to do is change the country. And here, again, we need to notice a difference between them and the Haredim, and the ultra-Orthodox. The ultra-Orthodox, it's not like they won't be happy if all Jews would keep the Sabbath in Israel, right? They will be thrilled, but their main concern is their own communities, preserving their way of life, is getting their children to be exactly as they are. That's what concerns them. For Ben-Gvir and for Smotrich specifically, and for Avi Maoz, they want your children to do what they do, to have their way of life. They want to influence the whole country, and they want to change the country with eventually to a theocratic state.
You can say that the religious Zionism was hijacked by those characters.
Yeah.
You know, you also mentioned...
Not to vindicate a mainstream religious Zionist public from its responsibility, right? These people vote. I mean, they voted for them, right?
Right.
They had not much choice. They perhaps felt that they, you know, needed some representation. Ayelet Shaked would not press the threshold. Bennett didn't even run in these elections. Yeah, so yes, I get it, but still, they actually voted for these races, okay?
Right, you had the mainstream that eventually voted for the extremists.
Yeah.
I mean, also the mainstream, I mean, because it's the mainstream of the Kippot Srugot, it's not the mainstream of Israel.
Yeah, obviously so it's also more like 90% of religious Zionists are right-wing. The mainstream is right-wing, let's not forget that. Again, they are conservative in many ways, but still, they are not anti-liberal, and these people are.
Yeah, I was actually, I interviewed 3 weeks
liberal,
ago.
Wait, you have many American listeners. I'm saying liberal, not as in progressive.
Right.
Liberal here is rights discourse, is the autonomy of the individual, and a government that respects the rights of its citizens and that really cannot infringe upon their rights. That's what I mean by liberal, not progressive. Which is
they wouldn't vote Democrats in the U.S.
Yeah.
But that's an important distinction, and thank you for that. And I actually interviewed Ohad Merlin. I don't know if you heard about him, but he's a member of a small group called Zionim Demokratim, the Team Zionim Demokratim. They're a part of the protest groups. They have figures like Yaya Pink and liberal religious Zionists. But he also said that they're a minority, and they used to be a lot bigger fraction of the religious Zionism that was going more and more to the right. Yeah. So When we're looking at what's happening, do you see any, I don't want to go into politics in that term, what do you think the outcome will be? I mean, do you think that from what we see now with the protests in Israel, most of the backlash is towards the Haredim?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily go towards Bezalel Smotrich and Ben Gvir, because you have some small pockets of, I would say, left groups or leftist groups who are talking about the occupation and the impact of Smotrich and Ben Gvir. But the mainstream is trying, maybe it's, you know, my experience only, and maybe you see it differently, but they're not touching, you know, Bezalel Smotrich and Ben Gvir and all of the chaos that they are creating.
I wouldn't say they're not touching, but you're right that Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox, are getting a lot of the shots, right? And of course, they're an easy target. They're an easy target. They look different. They live differently. And some of the criticism is justified. They want a total exemption from army service. They want a total exemption from essential studies in school while getting the same budgets from the state, you know, math and English and whatever, what can prepare people for modern life and modern workforce. And really, the rate that they are growing as a public will doom Israel to a third world economy if they don't integrate into the Israeli economical market, right? Or job market. So the criticism has truth in it. But I think they're getting perhaps a bit more criticism than they deserve. And indeed, I think you're right in that, yes, Smotrich and Rotman, which do get criticism, believe me, they do. But yes, they are the main force behind this judicial overhaul. And they are the most dangerous, certainly. Because you can't cut a deal with the ultra-Orthodox. Again, they want to maintain their communities, etc. But you can compromise with them. With Ben-Gvir, with Smotrich, with Rotman, there's no compromise. That's the problem.
So what do you think will be at the end? I know that it's a hard question, but you know...
I tend to
agree with you, by the way, that there is no compromise. But it seems like we're in a stage...
We don't need a compromise with Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. They need to get back to the place they came from, which is the extreme fringe. That's their place. They don't need to hold any office in the state. That's it. We do need to compromise with the ultra-Orthodox, which is an immense public, a very important part of the Israeli society, and that's possible. So that's not a problem. Now, what will happen in the end?
I mean,
it's really too early to know, but I'm very excited about the protests and immense civic awakening that has happened in Israel. Something truly dramatic has happened and truly exciting. For me, as a left winger, right, as a liberal Zionist, who always used to come to the demonstrations and basically see the same faces, suddenly to be in this immense wave of mainstream Israelis, right? Center left, some center right, right? For me, it's super exciting. And as a scholar of modern Jewish identity and of liberalism, to civic awakening of Israeli Jews re-engaging with democracy, liberalism, and even their own tradition, even Judaism, re-engaging with patriotism, because we're holding the Israeli flag. So for some, it's more natural. For some, on the more left wing, it's a bit strange, but it is. So something is truly exciting is happening. In the end, it depends on one person and the fate of one person, which is Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu. If Benjamin Netanyahu decides tomorrow morning to take the next plane to Barbados and live off his Swiss bank account, that's it. Israel returns to normal, right? That's it. And if not, the more he holds on power, the more damage Israel is taking.
And the more power they'll continue to gain, unless now I hear new voices calling for changing the coalition and having Gantz and Lapid to agree that Netanyahu will stay in power, but they will join forces with him, so they will stop the extremists. It always reminds me the story of the scorpion and the frog that are trying to cross the river.
You need
to remind the frog, you know, what a scorpion is.
It's a very forgetful frog, yes.
Yeah. So you did mention one more thing that I wanted to elaborate a little more. Yeah. You're talking about Zionism. And you earlier you mentioned that those fundamentalists are not exactly Zionists. And that's something, by the way, that I tend to agree with you. But can you shed some more light over it? Why, you know, they call themselves religious Zionism, though?
So let's differentiate. Hilltop youth have no respect for the state, have no reverence for any of its laws. They are completely anarchistic towards it. And they are completely hopeful that Israel state as it is will collapse. And they try to do whatever they can to, you know, help that along. When they go on these pogroms, it's of course for them revenge, yes, scare quotes, against Palestinians because of terrorist activity and such. But also for them, it's a way to undermine Israel's authority in the occupied territories and in general. And it's a way to damage Israeli international relations. And I'm sure they're happy about it. They want the state gone. So they are, of course, not Zionists. Then you've got the Kahanists. Kahana was never a Zionist. Kahana, if you read in his books that the state of Israel as it is illegitimate. When Kahana took his oath of office in parliament, in the Knesset, in 1984, he at first would not say that he would be loyal to the laws of the Israeli state, which is required when you take that oath. He would not say it. And then chairman of the Knesset would not have it. There was a big, you know, hoo-ha. And in order for him to become a Knesset member, he had to say it. So he said it. But that's the level of anti-Zionism that Kahanism has at its base. Now, you've got Smotrich and the other Hardal, like Avi Maoz, the Tau, Rabbi Tau group. I don't think we can call him anti-Zionist. They're Zionists. They're Zionists in their way, in a certain way. Tau is certainly a Zionist. He thinks the state is holy. So, yeah. And Smotrich doesn't, perhaps, is not as hopeful messianically as Tau is for the state or from the state. But still, I would certainly say he is Zionist enough.
Out of curiosity, because I always said that they are post, if they are not anti-Zionist, they are at least post-Zionist, because one of the points that is not being discussed too much in Israel, among the seculars, I would say, is what's going to happen with the West Bank. I always told my friends, listen, if they're going to have the majority, let them annex. I mean, you know, they always say that they have the solution. But now you have the most right-wing extremist government that doesn't annex the West Bank. On the other hand, they refuse to say what's going to be the future they see for the state of Israel and the Palestinians. But eventually, if we're going to make it to a binational state, then it's literally the end of the Zionist dream.
Oh, yeah. No, in that way, definitely they are post-Zionists. But that also makes Netanyahu a post-Zionist. I mean, Netanyahu
definitely
is leading Israel that way also. Israel will be either a binational state or a sort of a one man, one vote citizenship state, right? Sort of republic that way. But Smotrich or Ben-Gvir, to have enough power to annex the occupied territories, they would do it. They would do it, and they would run a formal apartheid regime. And Smotrich even wrote it. I mean, I think five years ago, he wrote an article called The Subjugation Plan or the...
Tochnit Ahra, I forgot how it's called in English.
Decisive. It can either be a decisiveness plan or subjugation plan. It goes both ways in translation, which is nice, right? And there he says, we will give the Palestinian three options. Either get out of here, you know, immigrate to another place, or fight and then we'll kill you, or agree to be second-class subjects, right? Not even citizens, which admittedly is not the most democratic. He writes it, right? He writes it. But we have no choice, and it's like Ger Toshav, the halachic category of Ger Toshav in the Bible, and that's what they should get. Right, so it's not an interpretation. It's not like I'm saying, I'm bad-mouthing Smotrich and lying to you and interpreting extreme way something. No, he wrote it in an article, apartheid formally, that he wants to enact the minute he has power. That's all.
Yeah, and that's something that we can definitely say about all of them, that at least we know that they put their mouth where their heart is. So, sadly speaking, but...
You know, they're not ashamed of it either. Yeah, Smotrich once said, I'm a proud homophobe. They're not ashamed of it. Yeah. That's them. It's like I'm saying, something that I like about Viktor Orban, right?
The Hungarian Prime autocrat. Minister.
Is that he also says, he says, I don't want a liberal state. He says, I don't want a liberal state. A liberal, again, not progressive, but rights discourse, etc. And it's, so he said it. So at least you know. At least he's not a liar.
What we can say about other representatives in the Knesset. But Tomer, I don't want to end before we have something optimistic for our audience.
So I talked about the incredible civic awakening here. And really, something is happening in these protests. I really think they're looking from outside. We are on week, what, 33, 34?
This is going to be 35. I mean, last weekend it was 34, which is a phenomena.
It's like of continuous demonstrations in all across the country, not only in Tel Aviv, right? Sometimes even twice a week, in the middle of the week also. It's incredible, really. It's amazing. It's really, really amazing. And we've already stopped the main clauses of the judicial overhaul. I mean, the judicial, something passed, but it's a very minute clause within the whole plan, which would have completely crushed Israeli democracy. So it's even successful. And so I'm optimistic in the short range that we'll be able to stop this government's most atrocious plans. What will happen after that, but something good has happened so far in Israel over the last few months.
The Knesset is now on a break, on a summer break. They also have Chofesh Gadol, as we say, but they are resuming actually work in September. In October, sorry. And before that, there are also going to be discussions in the Supreme Court in regards to the changes the coalition is trying to enact. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I really hope that your optimism will prevail.
At come September, we can be in a real constitutional crisis. Yeah. If the Supreme Court decides to strike down some of these laws or parts of them, and the government doesn't accept that, Israel is really in uncharted territory.
So let's hope for the best and for good news.
Yeah.
And I really want to thank you, Dr. Tomer Persico. You're always enlightening.
Thank you. And
thank you all for joining us for another episode of Balagan.
Thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure.
If you found this episode enlightening or thought-provoking, be sure to subscribe to Balagan on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And hey, if you're feeling extra generous, leave me a review. Your feedback means the world to me and helps others to discover the show. Of course, sharing the episode link with others will also be greatly appreciated. Remember, the conversation doesn't have to stop here. Join me on Balagan's Facebook group to continue discussing today's episode and connect with fellow listeners. I would love to hear your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for future topics. You are more than welcome to check my website, www.balaganil.com, for additional resources. I'm committed to connecting you with Israel and providing you with proper context. Until the next time, remember that knowledge is power. Keep learning, keep growing, and continue engaging with Israel. I can't wait to catch you in the next episode of Balagan.